Blog Talk Radio. Good evening and welcome to Awaken Us. First, I would like to give thanks to the Creator that leads, guides, and directs us in all things. My journey has turned into an eye-opening awakening, and I am here to share that awakening with you. This podcast will explore who are we? What is the difference between a person and a son? What is our purpose? Why do we hold certain beliefs? Why do we tend to see ourselves and others in a certain way? Why do we act the way we do towards ourselves and others? And what does any of this have to do with the events we experience in our world daily? I would like to also thank every one of you for your support that you're giving me. My meetup friends, my LinkedIn connections, my Twitter friends, Facebook friends, Goodreads friends, and many more. Thank you for your emails, your text messages, and your kind words. During this podcast, I will read from my book, He Lives a Living Testimony, second edition with added preface and edited back cover. Every 3 months, I give away three of my books through my website, www.awaken-us.org. You can click the link to enter and win. The giveaway starts this month, and the winners will be announced once a month. I am promoting a message, not just selling a book. It will be a gift that will keep on giving. And as always, I invite you to visit my website for all information on upcoming events, studies, videos, bookings, and news. The Awaken Us platform will air researchers that address our collective human experiences, both good and evil. The natural law versus man's law. Did we break the first commandment of God when we took on a false identity from birth? Do we really own anything on this earth? Do we have free will? And words. How many meanings can a word have, and what words have we learned that keeps us in bondage, slavery? Stay tuned in for all of our studies, then study to show yourself approved. This Sunday on Awaken Us, I will read from my book, He Lives, The Living Testimony, Preface Part 7, and we will continue with researcher and teacher Mark Passio of www.whatonearthishappening.com. This seminar series explores 20 points that will give you insight on what it truly means to be awake. We will continue with point number 15, recognizing free will and responsibility, knowing who's responsible for our actions, knowing we are the problem because we won't change our thinking, knowing what moral culpability is and knowing the cause and effect of our actions. Self-loathing, why people are order followers, not exercising conscience, not knowing right from wrong. This pre-recorded seminar series is called What It Truly Means to Be Awake, Streetwise Spirituality. This seminar series will continue for weeks to come, so do come back to get all the information that will uplift and inform the human consciousness of us all. Points 1 through 14 of this series can now be heard on my main website, www.awaken-us.org. Reviews and comments can be emailed to us at awakenus@yahoo.com. Hold on, I'll be right back. Dismissing myths and strongholds, one mind at a time. Awaken Us.
for immediate release, learning our part in the Creator's plan. He Lives, a living testimony, has been published by Outskirts Press. Outskirts Press announces the latest version of the highly anticipated, motivational, and inspirational self-help book from Decatur, Georgia, published by writer Sharon Pelham. Mrs. Pelham's most recent book to date was revised in March 2019 with added preface and edited back cover. This revised 5x8 paperback book is available worldwide on book retailer websites such as Amazon and Barnes & Noble. The webpage at www.awakeus.org was updated simultaneously with the book's publication relaunching.
I share all this to say that all references to Jesus Christ in this book were before my awakening. Jesus was never God in my mind. He is a son, a messenger who came to tell us about the Creator. He represents the esoteric Christian who believes in an internal God, but not the exoteric Christian who believes in an external God. Again, Jesus was the first son of many sons to come to spread the good news of the Creator and the creation. All references to Jesus are in the context of the Son, not the Father. It was not my desire to rewrite my book omitting Jesus, but to write this preface as to bring clarity to my awakening. The Jesus character represents the principles of natural law. Preface, Part 7. What's on your mind? Let's take it to the word. Call me. Dow 516-531-9476. All callers are screened prior to airing. Mark Passio's body of work is a result of many years of extensive research and investigation into the nature of our shared reality. Through his presentation, videos, and podcasts, he takes us on a journey of self-exploration, examining human consciousness in the way it relates to the universal problems which we currently face as a species. Mark is a presenter with a message of spiritual awareness. He is now taking a proactive approach to the task of spreading this significant information to others in hopes of penetrating this information into the realm of human consciousness. So the next voice you will hear will be that of Mark Passio. Get your pencil and paper, study to show yourself approved, and do not leave your salvation up to any man. Hold on.
Thank you so much for being here today, ladies and gentlemen. It's going to be a great day today. I'm going to be giving a seminar here entitled Streetwise Spirituality: What Does It Truly Mean to Be Awake? And it's going to be a lot different than what many people think of as the awakening process. There's going to be a lot of points in here. I'm going to cover 20 main points as to what is true awakening, not pseudo-spiritual awakening as we may hear about in the New Age circles. So that's the title of the seminar. And but before we actually jump into the material, I'd like to give a few caveats regarding what I do and my presentation style in general. So the first thing people should keep in mind is that you will not be seeing or hearing anything, quote, new here today. As the old saying goes, there is nothing new under the sun. You hear that, many people will hear that phrase but not really understand what was meant by that phrase, that old phrase. What it means is that the truth is singular and eternal. It is not going anywhere. The truth has always been with us. It has always been there. It will always be there. Okay? All I can do personally as a presenter is get up here and present this information in some sort of a personalized format or framework with my particular style and my particular aesthetics applied to the presentation, which is what I'm going to do here today. My personal presentation style has been described by some as very intense. Now, for people who may not be familiar with my work, by a show of hands, how many people are completely new to my work? Completely new to it. That is phenomenal. That is fantastic. Okay? Now, with that having been said, you don't have any prerequisite information that I've put out there. So you have to understand, this presentation is like an amalgamation. It's like a coming together of all my former material. Okay? So with that having been said, it would probably behoove you to go back to my older material and check that out. And you could do that at my website, whatonearthishappening.com. I always tell people, go to the podcast section of that website and listen to the podcasts in order. If you do that, that opens up a worldview, a tapestry will emerge from that information from doing it like that. It's a stepwise progression. But there are people who have described my presentation style, and rightly so, I don't disagree with them, as very, very intense and sometimes even combative. And I don't really make any bones about that. It's true. Some people here today may be very likely to get upset or angered by some of the things that you'll hear me say, and that's fine. So be it. Okay? The fact of the matter is that the truth itself, by its very nature, is belligerent, especially in the time of deceit that we're living in. Okay? Because truth wages war against mind control. And that's what I'm here to do. I'm waging a war against the forces of deceit, against the forces of darkness, against the forces of mind control in this world. Okay? I do not present the information that I present to be liked. I don't care who likes me or who hates me. I'm not interested in that. This isn't a popularity contest for me. All right? I don't do this to make money, because I certainly don't make a whole lot of that. Actually, I do this to make the real money, not the fake kind, if people know what I mean by that. Money, as a word, means one eye, mon eye. I do this to make real money, not the fake Federal Reserve note variant. Okay, but I also, I don't really want to do this with my time. This isn't what I would prefer doing. I have a whole lot of other personal interests I'd like to be pursuing. I do this because I recognize that in the time that we're living in a time of such overwhelming ignorance that exists in the world and such overwhelming deception that is going on all around us, the fact that I understand the information that I do understand places me in a position of moral obligation to communicate that information to other people in an attempt to help them to understand it as well. So that's why I do what I do. Every person who is here today and wishes to take real value away from the seminar, which I would assume is all of you, after all, you are making your time available to be here and you spent money to be here, should make a conscious effort to do two specific things while you are here. The first is to try as much as within your ability to set aside your personal perceptions of me as the presenter. And I know that can be difficult. But this includes setting aside things like how you think I personally look, how I dress, how my voice sounds, okay? Paying attention to trivialities like that are only going to distract you and detract your mental focus away from the information that is being presented, which is the important thing here, not me. I'm not the important thing here. The information is what's important. And the second thing is try to be consciously aware of any impulses that you may have to reject information based on emotional response. And that's also quite difficult for people to do. That's why I try to make these points consciously, upfront, Okay? So that you're holding those ideas in your mind as we proceed. You cannot think about this information with your emotions. So you may hear things that anger you here today. It's a logical fallacy to gauge the truthfulness or the veracity of any information that you hear based solely upon how you feel when you're first hearing it. That is a trap that you can fall into. So that's why I try to make people consciously aware of it right from the jump. The last thing that I want to bring up before we start is that this seminar is a tapestry of information that is meant to be taken in as a whole, not separate or in individuated chunks, okay? It's a tapestry of information. It's designed specifically to be seen in its entirety. So I highly encourage people to gain the maximum value from the information I'm going to present here to stay for the duration of the whole seminar, at least the presentation part of it. Okay? We're going to do an extended question and answer session after my presentation. But if you stay for the whole part of it, you'll recognize the pattern that I'm trying to make clear here. Okay? If you don't stay for the whole thing, more likely than not, you're not going to see the entire pattern that I'm trying to lay out, and then you're not going to gain maximum value. All right? So with those things, those caveats having been said, let's jump into the information. So what this whole thing is about is, what does it truly mean to be awake? We hear this word a lot, right? We hear the word awake. He's awake. He's awake to what's going on. You know, he's not unconscious. He's not asleep. She's conscious. She's awake. Okay? Well, what does that really mean? And people have different thoughts about what that means. There's whole communities of people that think that that means completely different things. All right? What I'm going to try to do is present a brand new perspective on what this means. And people are going to hear some points that they probably never would have considered. All right? So I consider what these points are describing real spiritual awakening. Not, a pseudo-spirituality that is all too often presented as being true awakening in the modern, quote, New Age communities. All right? So the information that I'm talking about here has real-world, practical, applicable value. All right? It's about spirit in the flesh. That's the balance that I'm trying to strike here today. We're not about our head way up in the clouds, okay, without our feet firmly on the earth. That, see, this image represents in the Hermetic philosophy what was known as the stellar man or the stellar woman, the being that is of the star matter, okay? They are deeply, deeply awoken, and they understand real spirituality. So their head is in the cosmos. Their head is in the stars. But where is their feet? It is planted firmly on the earth. The work that we are to do is to be done here and now, not in some hereafter, not in some other dimension, not in some other time. It is about the here and the now. So that image is another image, you know, that I want to set forward as an archetype for today. Spirit in the flesh. Work being done on the ground, even though our mind is of the cosmos.
He Lives, a Living Testimony is 50 pages in length and is being aggressively promoted to appropriate markets with a focus in the motivational and inspirational self-help category. With U.S. wholesale distribution through Ingram and Baker & Taylor and pervasive online availability through Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and elsewhere, He Lives a Living Testimony meets consumer demand through both retail and library markets with a suggested retail price of $12.95. Additionally, He Lives a Living Testimony can be ordered by retailers or wholesalers for the maximum trade discount price set by the author in quantities of 10 or more from the Outskirts Press Direct Bookstore at www.outskirtspress.com/bookstore. For more information or to contact the author, visit www.awakeus.org.
Being awake means recognizing the critical importance of both free will and personal responsibility. Two things many people don't want to even acknowledge or look at. And this means having a deep understanding of what moral culpability is. Because when we're talking about responsibility, what we really mean is, Who's responsible for that having been manifested in the world? And this is another thing a lot of New Agers want to leave out and not talk about. You know, they want to wash right over this or say, oh no, we don't need to talk about who's at fault. It's nobody's fault. Nobody's at fault. Nobody's to blame. Well, there are people to blame. There are people at fault through erroneous bad thinking, bad decision making, bad judgment. There are people who are to blame for our condition. And I would say everybody who continues to support and condone those bad modalities of thinking are to blame. That's why I say I'm not involved in that process. I'm out of those modes of thought. I don't lend my behavior to those modes of behavior. So I'm not causing those things, me individually, personally. And there are many other people who are in that condition that through no fault of their own is the world keep going into a state of ever spiraling decay into immorality and slavery. The problem is most people are at fault for that condition because they will not change their thinking. They will not abandon their religions, their false religions. Moral culpability is the determination of who is ultimately at fault or deserving of blame, or in other words, who is responsible for the commission of actions which have resulted in harm or loss to other individuals. The word culpable literally means at fault or deserving of blame, from the Latin noun culpa, which means fault or blame. A dangerous New Age movement deception is that blame is invalid as a concept, and it should never exist. We should get rid of the whole concept of blame. Okay? When people buy into this notion, it quickly descends into the idea that no one is ever truly responsible for anything that manifests in this world. That's what they're really saying when they say, don't judge, don't blame. Nobody's at fault. Nobody's... things just happen. It just magically got that way. No, things don't just happen. According to law, every effect is preceded by its cause. Things are caused to happen. They don't just magically occur. Okay? The condition we're in now did not just magically occur. God didn't just throw us on the earth and say, well, I'm going to enslave you now. No, we did that to ourselves. Or it possibly had a lot to do with being done to us, which I'm not going to get to in this presentation, but we are continuing that condition, let's put it that way. Okay? So, we have to understand, don't get trapped in the blame game. Don't keep blaming everybody else and pointing fingers outside. But don't think that blame is a total illusion either and doesn't exist. Because that's the idea that moral culpability doesn't exist. And then, hey, why don't we just allow everything because nobody's really responsible for what they're doing, right? You could see how a seemingly innocuous New Age so-called teaching can lead to a very imbalanced condition if it's left unchecked, which in many cases, with right-brained individuals, it is left unchecked. They're not applying that judgment and discernment filter. So, I'm going to show you a little meme I put up on Facebook one time and got hate mail as a result because people don't like this question. I say, here's a great party starter. Break this out at your next party, this question. Okay? They'll love you for it. You'll be this invited back, you know? Who is more morally culpable, the order giver or the order follower? Now, before we answer the question, let's emphatically recognize the question, because people often don't hear the question. They hear what they want to hear being asked, but they don't hear the actual question being asked. Okay? People, you know, both of them are responsible. I didn't ask if either party was responsible. Of course, both of these parties share in moral culpability when harm results. I didn't ask the question, do either one of these people or both of them have moral culpability when harm results for what they have, you know, done, put into effect. I said, who is more morally culpable? Meaning that there is an imbalance in culpability here. One party is more culpable than the other party regarding a harmful action that takes place. Is it the order giver who has more moral culpability or responsibility when they order an action to be done and then harm results? Or does the order follower have more moral culpability when they perform the action that they were ordered to perform and then harm results? Okay? Well, how you answer this question is very simple. You just do a mental exercise. Okay? And you envision the harm that has been done. Okay? So here's what the harm that has been done in this instance looks like. Okay? And I think the problem in this country is that's not our children. That's the reason we continue to allow these behaviors. Because it's not bombs raining down upon our children. And there's that not really understanding the true self mentality, that schism. Okay? Seeing everything in a state of separation. Well, that's somebody else. That's their problem. Okay? Now, when that happens to a six-year-old girl in the countries we're bombing the hell out of because we want their resources, okay, who is more morally culpable for that death? Here's the question that needs to be asked. Well, the politicians who ordered the attack say, my actions didn't cause that. And then the soldiers who are actually responsible for the death through their behaviors say, my actions didn't cause that. You envision that scenario right there. Both people are saying, I'm not the one whose actions manifested that condition. And then the question that you need to ask yourself is, who is lying and who is telling the truth? You could start throwing things at me anytime now. You know? I'm telling you, I got so much hate mail when I put this slide on Facebook one time. I couldn't believe, I mean, I think people would have tried to murder me if they were in my presence. Okay? That's how much people don't want to deal with that truth. There will be a question and answer session after I'm complete. Okay? So, read the question, not what you want to hear. Read the actual statement. My action didn't cause that. Okay, well, you could say speech is an action and they spoke to that person, told them, but I would say it's decidedly different than pressing a trigger or flying a plane and dropping a bomb from it. Decidedly different. A little bit of speech from my mouth to someone else's ears is an altogether different action than actually blowing somebody up. But I could just be the weird one. I don't know. You know, maybe I'm weird for thinking there's a big difference between those two modes of behavior. I would suggest that the people over here, as deplorable as we all may think that they are, and I certainly believe they're all deplorable, are telling the truth, unfortunately. And these people, if they were to say, my actions didn't cause that, that's a lie. Okay? And that's how you know who's more morally culpable. The painful truth is that the order follower always, again, blanket statement, the ego hates blanket statements, okay? Always, in every instance, bears more moral culpability than the order giver. Notice I am not saying the order giver does not bear any moral culpability. Please do not put those words in my mouth. Of course the order giver bears much moral culpability as well. Not as much as the order follower, though. Okay? The reason the order follower bears more culpability is because the order follower is the one who actually performed the action, and in taking such action, actually brought about the result and harm into physical manifestation in the world. Without their behavior, the event could not have manifested. Without their behavior, the harmful event could not have manifested. The politician could talk all they want, all day long, giving orders to as many people as are in their presence to go out and do this harmful behavior. It would never actually be accomplished without the order follower. Okay? That's how you know that they bear more moral culpability than the order giver themselves. And if somebody can't understand that, I can't help you. I'm sorry. If you don't agree with that from that explanation, there's nothing I can do. I'm not telling you that this is my opinion. I'm telling you that's an eternal, immutable truth about how something in the universe operates. It's not my opinion. That is something I had to continuously ask myself until I discovered what was real there. And that's the truth. That's why I call this slide the painful truth, because most people don't want to accept that. The ego wants to look for an out. It wants to say, no, it can't be, it can't be, it can't be. That's what the ego wants to do. Always run, always go in circles, always say, but, no. That's true. We have to accept what is true. And the problem is, it brings so much pain that most people shut down. They don't want to hear it. Order following is the problem on this planet. It is the pathway to every single form of evil and chaos in the world. Because order followers always usher in evil and chaos. You think the dark occultists that I once worked with are going to actually dirty and soil their hands? They're going to say words to people that they consider their mind-controlled dogs, and then have them go out and perform all kinds of atrocities and laugh at them while they're doing it. And I'm telling you, that's exactly what they do. They call these people their dogs. Satanists call police and military personnel our dogs, our pets. That's why they give them dog tags in the Marines. It's a mockery. It's occult symbolism mockery. They're saying, we're your owners, like we own a dog. And here's your dog tag for your loyalty. Thank you, dog. I'm telling you, I saw Satanists at rituals laughing hilariously at off-duty police officers that were part of their grotto. That's what they call covens in Satanism. Laughing uncontrollably at police, off-duty police, that they had assigned to watch the ritual house for them on a high satanic holiday. Literally pissing in their pants, laughing at them, calling them our dogs, our pets. And you know what? It's true. They're correct. It's true. I would love, love, love to be able to pick up for these individuals and say, oh, they're nobody's pets. They're on their leash. On their leash. And they take pride in that, as if it's something to take pride of. Pride in. I'm loyal like a dog is loyal no matter what my master does. I don't exercise any judgment or discernment. I don't actually think about whether the behavior I'm doing is right or wrong. I just do it when I'm ordered. There's absolutely nothing that is of anything that should be looked up to when it comes to that kind of a dynamic. That should never be put up on a pedestal. That should be frowned upon. Order following is the pathway to every form of evil and chaos in our world. It should never be seen as a virtue, ever, by anyone who considers themselves a moral or awake human being. Order followers have ultimately been personally, morally culpable for every form of slavery and every single totalitarian regime that has ever existed upon the face of this planet. Every single one. And we think we're somehow exempt or different because it's us. Can't happen here. Can't happen here. Newsflash, it already happened here. Not future tense, past tense. Order followers, by definition, following orders means doing what you are told without judging for yourself whether or not that action that you are being ordered to carry out is right or wrong. That is the definition. By definition, is that not what following someone else's order means? Can anybody debate that that's what the definition of following an order means? That is the actual action that you're going to do. You're saying, the order has been issued. I am an order follower. What I do is carry out the order. Well, is an order follower a philosopher? Do they sit and consider and weigh and debate? No. These people say, it wasn't me that gave the order, as if that somehow lets them off the hook for what they're about to do. Take it up with the politicians. No, I'm not going to take it up with the politicians. I'm going to take it up with you. You're the one doing the thing. Doing the action. Why would I take it up with anybody else? Are they over there? Did a politician in Philadelphia City Hall come over and throw me in handcuffs for communicating ideas on a piece of paper with my fellow human beings? No. Some punk little boy did. Okay? Who followed their orders, thinking that he's God and can take away my rights. You know, that's who did that. The politician didn't do it. They had something to do with it, but they didn't actually perform that behavior. Okay? That's the definition of what an order follower is. And it's called taking up your part in evil. That's what it really is. I don't care whether the order is moral. I'm telling you, if someone else gave you an order to do something that's moral and you followed it without thinking about whether it was right or wrong, you just still engaged in evil. Even if you didn't cause one iota of harm because you advocated your personal responsibility to judge the difference between right and wrong for yourself and said, I'm going to give that over to somebody else. And that's evil. That's where all evil begins. Those who are following orders, by definition, cannot be exercising conscience. Because by the very definition of what is the exercise of conscience, exercising conscience means that one is willfully choosing for themselves right action over wrong action once they have distinguished between those two separate modes of behavior. That's what exercising conscience means by definition. So you can't have it both ways. You can't be exercising conscience and following the orders of somebody else. The exercise of conscience is a process that you yourself engage in after you yourself have weighed the difference between right and wrong within your own mind. By definition. The people who do this are no different than these troops from Nazi Germany. Zero difference. Were the people of Nazi Germany a moral people in the aggregate? No, they couldn't have been. Impossible. Just like it's impossible for us to be a moral people in the aggregate with what is taking place in our society now. We're going down the same path. History repeats itself not unwaveringly, not unalteringly. But people always leave out the second part of that, of those words of wisdom. History repeats itself when we refuse to learn its lessons. That's when history repeats. It doesn't just follow endless cycles that you can never change or get out of. When we made mistakes in the past, or people before us made mistakes in the past, and the people today in the present refuse to look at what went wrong. They don't want to look at how the Nazi society was created. They don't want to look at how any totalitarian regime was created because, oh, that's disturbing. Why should I spend my time studying that? Because when you ignore history, you're doomed to repeat. The lesson that you refused, you're going to repeat it over and over and over and over and over again. That's when history repeats, when ignorance is present, ignorance of the lessons that it has to teach us. That is the result of following orders. That always has been the result of following orders. And if we don't get people to stop following their orders now, get used to that image, because you're going to see it in your lifetime, in person, not on a screen. Now, I'm not saying that to fearmonger, ladies and gentlemen. I'm telling you because that is a historical pattern that repeats unwaveringly when we start putting order followers up on a pedestal. And don't really deeply understand and integrate the lessons of morality in our own lives. And then teach that to everyone around us, especially our children.
Let's continue with Mark.
Order followers and people who support them always try to run. See, this is what the ego does. It always seeks for justification, justifying. Well, I need somehow to justify this when there is no justification. Okay? It doesn't exist. But people want to look for one. That's what the ego does. Okay? The word justification. Let's break it down from its etymological roots. Again, I keep doing this because I'm trying to impress upon people the importance of the origins of words. Get yourself a Latin dictionary, a Latin reader, a Greek dictionary, a Greek reader, ancient Greek, okay, and ancient Latin, and study where words came from. We don't even understand what we're saying half the time because we don't understand where these words that we're using on a day-to-day basis came from. Justification comes from the Latin noun jus, meaning law. We already saw that one before, right or law, and the Latin verb facere, which means to make or to create. It's where we get the word fake from, it's where we get the word fashion from, it's where we get the word fasci from, which underlies the word fascism, okay? It means to fake or to make something in the image and likeness of, to create something, but again, it's to fashion it, to make it look like something. That's why fashion is about dressing something up so it looks good, even though maybe underneath the surface it doesn't look that good. Okay? Well, when we're trying to fashion right or fashion the law, to try to create a right or create what the law is, that's offering a justification. Literally, to create the law or to create what is right. We're looking to make a wrong into a right. I was following orders is never a valid excuse or justification for immoral criminal behavior. And this lame attempt to abdicate personal responsibility should never be accepted as a valid excuse for such behavior. There is no justification when it comes to violence. You are responsible if you conduct violence. Passing the buck on to somebody else isn't going to work. It didn't work for these people, and nor should it have at Nuremberg, saying, I was just following my orders. Well, that didn't fly. Nor should it have. And nor should it fly for these people. Because engagement in violence is engagement in violence, and you had no right. Period. It's about personal responsibility to gauge right from wrong. An individual's personal responsibility to choose right action over wrong action for themselves always belongs to them. That is always their own possession. This goes back to ownership. I don't care whether you don't like that you're in control of that, you are in ownership and control of that and can never not be. That can never be. I could never, can in nature, never hand somebody else my personal responsibility and say, could you please be responsible for judging right and wrong for me? I could claim with my words, with my mouth, that I could do that. But in nature, it could never be done. I'm still responsible for my own behavior. So is everyone else. One can only claim that they are abdicating personal responsibility for such choice to someone else. It can never actually be done in reality. More simply put, an individual is always personally responsible for their own actions. Okay? Now, the only caveats I would give to that, okay, and say it's not a 100% blanket statement, it's largely a blanket statement, is you could look at people with certain genetic conditions, you know, palsies that have a deteriorated brain condition. Okay, they're unwell, they're sick, unwell physically individuals. Okay, that I can understand, that person not ultimately responsible for every behavior they're going to take. Also, the one other instance I would say is people under hard electronic forms of mind control, which do exist. Trauma-based mind control, which also exists as well. Okay? There is an ability through different techniques to actually remove free will to a very, very large extent from an individual if they are tortured enough. Okay? So there are people who this has been done to, and they literally become like a mind-controlled robot. That technique does exist. It has existed for thousands of years. What I'm saying is that is the infinitesimally tiny minority in the world, the amount of people who have actually undergone trauma-based mind control or direct electronic stimulus and control of the brain, of the central nervous system and the brain. Okay, those are examples that I would say fall outside of that person is actually then not responsible for what they're doing. They're being deliberately, willfully, physically controlled by their handler. Okay, but it's the vast minority. Okay, an individual who is not under those particular conditions is always responsible for their own actions. Most people erroneously believe that they can hand over their, and this is the second part of personal responsibility. See, one involves what you're going to do, okay, in regard to other people, especially if you're asked or ordered, quote, to do it. Then there's this other part. What if somebody accosts me with violence? Well, is it my responsibility to deal with that? And I'm going to tell you, yes, it is. It's not anybody else's responsibility to deal with that. Okay. Now, I'm not saying that means if you see violence being conducted upon somebody and you have the ability to do something, don't respond. That would be total passivity. Responsibility is your ability to respond. If you were in the capacity to be able to respond and help somebody, I feel you have an obligation to do that. You're not just going to sit there and let somebody be violently accosted unchallenged. And of course, you know, you'd have to exercise common sense. Like, if that person has a semi-automatic rifle and you don't, you might not want to just go right into their path of fire either. Which is why I highly support and believe firmly in the right to arm oneself. Okay? And I am a gun owner. And anybody who is truly enlightened, I think, does not have any avulsion or revulsion to gun ownership. That doesn't mean I say everybody should go out and buy a gun. If you're comfortable with it, I think you should own one. But I definitely think everybody who considers themselves enlightened should support personal, individual gun ownership that is unfettered by the state. Okay? Because everybody has the ability to defend themselves under natural law right. So that's a big part of it. But here's the thing. Most people have been convinced by the state that they don't have the right to personally defend themselves, okay? And they think they could just hand over their natural law right to defend themselves to another individual, another group, another entity, namely the state, and that somehow they're the monopoly on force, okay? I would say they've become largely the monopoly on violence, not force. But in making such a false claim that somehow they're responsible for defending or protecting me, okay? What that person's trying to do is they're trying to abdicate a responsibility which always belongs to them. No one else has the responsibility to defend me. That's my ownership. That's my responsibility. And I have that ability, okay? I'm not saying I'm any kind of a big or bad individual. But I'm telling you, what puts me in a position to truly have that responsibility has nothing to do with my physical prowess or even whatever personal defense weapons I own. It's the knowledge that I carry here. And the first way that you defend yourself is you live under the shield of protection of natural law. When you do that, the universe is going to open doors for you before you even know they exist. It's going to offer protection. It's going to put you in the right place at the right time. It's going to keep you from the wrong place at the wrong time. So when you walk that path, you're being defended by the universe, first and foremost. And then my AK does the rest. You can never give away that personal responsibility. Can't be given away. The people who are order followers are ultimately stuck in a condition known as self-loathing. Self-loathing is the underlying psychological condition that causes people to attempt to abdicate their own personal responsibility, to exercise conscience, and to fall into patterns of order following and justification. In other words, nobody can go into a pattern of order following and trying to offer justifications for following orders and doing what is immoral because someone else told them to do it, unless they're in a deep underlying condition of hating themselves. Order followers hate themselves, and it cannot be any other way. You cannot have true self-love and be an order follower simultaneously. Sorry to burst anybody's bubble, that's the way that it is. Okay? Nobody who truly loves themselves would follow anybody else's orders. Let me just say that emphatically once again. No one who truly loves themselves would ever follow anybody else's orders. That means you're telling them, I'm your slave, I'm your dog, walk all over me, tell me whatever you want to do, I don't care whether it's right or wrong, I'll do it. There's no self-love in that. There's no self-respect in that. There's no virtue in that at all. At all. At all. Following orders, just as it is not possible for an order follower to truly be exercising conscience, it is also not possible for an order follower to truly love themselves, by definition, because they have abdicated their personal responsibility to someone else who doesn't care about the karmic consequence or debt that's being brought down upon them for following their immoral order. They don't care. People have to look, especially police and military, they got to look at who's really calling the shots. Because if you look at who's really calling the shots, I'll tell you who it is. It's people in dark black robes that are murdering children and raping children before they murder them. That's who it is. That's who controls the police. That's who controls the military. My friend Jay Parker, who you should all check him out. He's been interviewed on my radio show 3 times. He has his own radio show now. The things he's been through, unbelievable. They'd make you cringe. They'd keep you up at night. The things he's told me. One of his best friends, being at the age of like, I think he was like 13 or maybe even younger at the time. No, he was probably younger. I think he was like 7 years old or 8 years old, something like that. He was anally raped so viciously by the Satanists in the cult that my friend Jay grew up in, that they actually perforated his rectum, and he bled out over time. Okay? Jay went with an adult that he reported this vicious, inhuman crime to the police in his local community, who essentially told him, better luck in the next life, kid. We know about the cult that's operating in this location. They are the government. They own the government. They are all the banks here. They are all the businesses in this community. They are all the important people in this community. That's their religion. We follow their orders. In the past some police who did want to do something moral had tried to take him out, and this coven in this location in Delaware started executing police and, you know, going to their homes and having them executed. And then asked, "You want to be next?" And so they said, "No, we're done," and just continued to follow the orders of this sick satanic cult. And I'm telling you, this is going on in so many more communities than you could possibly even understand, that it's omnipresent. It's omnipresent. Okay? And this is who these people who are self-loathing order followers are taking their orders from. And again, if you don't understand that, you're not awake. You only believe you're awake. You believe you have some understanding of what's going on this planet. I'm telling you, you don't know near the bottom of it. Not even close. Now, this condition of self-loathing is what puts people into a prison. That's what's putting them in a self-imposed cage. Taking this attitude that, hey, since I hate myself because of all the suffering I've endured, okay, I'm going to go out and just cause suffering to other people. Well, that's the surest fire way into a cage that you've locked yourself into and thrown away the key. Right there. That, I call that being the golem. They're the perfect mind-controlled robot slave of the person who's completely manipulating them emotionally and mentally. A golem, it's an ancient Semitic term of a being who was animated by having breath blown into it, but it was created by sorcery, you know, as a robot, as a flesh robot. A golem is like a flesh robot, okay, that doesn't really have a true animus or soul. Okay, it is something that is just imbued with something that is like a soul that operates, you know, to basically pull the strings of the animated puppet or robot. And that's what an order follower is, a golem. And it's by their own choice. It doesn't have to be that way, you know. They love it. They love it. They can't get enough of it. Because how they look at it is, if I did anything else, my God, I would have to think for myself then. I would have to study. I would have to read. Reading? Are you crazy? Reading? I would have to learn the difference between right and wrong. It's not for me. No thanks. I'll have none of that, thank you. Let me go back to following my orders. As a golem who is just, you know, laughed at by their owners. There's no self-respect there at all. And I'm telling you, the only thing that can ever reverse that condition and bring somebody out of that state of self-loathing is true self-respect. True self-respect. Not just doing this because, oh, hey, that pays the bills, that puts food on the table, that keeps my wife with me. That's not what self-respect is about. That's not what responsibility is about. I don't care how many children you have or whether they would go hungry if you quit your job. I'm telling you, if you're doing a job where your job is to follow orders, quit your job and it doesn't make a difference what happens to your family. That's the sacrifice you may have to make to do the right thing. Okay? That's what I'm telling you. I'm telling people to do that. That's what it means to be in real personal responsibility. Responsibility isn't keeping your home. Responsibility isn't keeping the food on the table in your home. I don't care how many kids you have. Responsibility is about knowing the difference between right and wrong. And not saying, like a Nazi said, the party is going to pay for the food on my table. Well, did that make the Nazi any less evil in the actions they were carrying out? See, it's justification. And it doesn't work under natural law. Natural law doesn't say, like gravity doesn't say, was that the child in her Sunday dress who went off the edge of the cliff? Oh my God, then the law of gravity must be suspended. We can't have that. No, natural law doesn't say that. It doesn't care. It says, what was the action that was taken? There's the result, period. It's a computer program. You're not a computer program. You have free will. The universe, the way the universe is constructed, the whole universe is operating under boundary conditions of law. That makes us even more unique than the entire universe. Because we're gifted with free will to choose what actions we will perform. The entire construct of the universe doesn't even have that gift. It's bound by law unwaveringly. And what the universe is going to, it's not going to say, hey, did that Nazi, did that cop who's shutting down free speech in America, did they have kids to support? How many? Are they paying alimony? You know? Doesn't care about those things. Those are human-derived things, okay? The human justification searches for reasons for continuing evil. Natural law doesn't care why you did something, only whether it was done or not. That's it. And this is what the ego does not want to hear. I get it, folks. I get how much people don't want to hear what I'm saying. I get it. Believe me, I'm under no illusions that this is in any way a popular message. No illusions. One thing, I may be a lot of things that people will call me. One thing I am not is a naive human being. Okay? The things I've seen have driven any naivete out of me a long time ago.
If you'd like to talk to me after the show, call in 5 minutes prior to the show ending. Dial 516-531-9476.
Respect comes from the Latin again. I've broken down probably 80 words in Latin and Greek already. It comes from the Latin prefix re, which means again, and then the Latin spectare, which means to look at or to consider. Okay? So when we're developing true self-respect, it means we have to look at ourselves in the mirror again and again and again, to look at ourselves again. And how many people, that's the most horrific thing. Hell would be that for some people on this planet. That would be hell. Okay? Personally, I can do that not because I am in any kind of love with my own reflection, but I can look at myself at what I'm made of all day long because I know I'm standing within righteousness. I know the difference between right and wrong, and I attempt to live that in every moment of my life. I'm not saying that makes me perfect. I'm not saying that makes me better than anybody else. I'm saying I'm comfortable with me. I could take a look in the mirror and say, who is that looking at back at me? And is that a good person? And I could honestly say, without justification, I'm living a moral life because I know the difference between right and wrong. Okay? Most people, that's hell for them. They never want to do one moment of introspection upon themselves and their own psyche and their own behaviors. Okay? So that's what real self-respect means, taking a deep, inner, hardcore look at oneself over and over again. Only self-respect can heal self-loathing and therefore help to put an order follower on the path to conscience. Okay, another part of the schism when it comes to not understanding free will. Okay, this section is about personal responsibility and free will. The schism that makes people stay in a state where they don't understand that free will exists and how important it is to changing the human condition is the origins schism, about where we come from as human beings. And there's two hotly contested, deeply entrenched, imbalanced paradigms about where human beings have come from. The first is Darwinian scientism, which postulates the notion that we simply came from matter that is evolving over eons of time, but that ultimately matter is supreme above everything, and so survival is the ultimate point of everything. Okay, that's the whole primary foundation and purpose for everything, is the survival and continuance of physical material, genetic material in this case. Okay, so spirit is essentially non-existent or it is insignificant. Okay, we don't even need to consider that. Forget morality, because hey, there's no underlying intelligence in consciousness or nature. That's not directed by mind. Okay, there's no creator. All right, nature is essentially a dead and mechanized clockwork with absolutely no purpose, except to continue to survive, of course. And genes are ultimately these little bits of matter that we call genes that code for certain traits and characteristics in a human being are ultimately responsible for everything that we do, and they control a human being's behavior like pieces of a computer program code control a computer program. That's the Darwinian paradigm in a nutshell. Okay? And what it's essentially saying is we're at the mercy of genes. Now, what's the conflicting paradigm to this, that, you know, these two dialectics war against each other constantly. Well, creationism. That spirit is ultimately supreme, matter is inferior, it should be looked down upon. The creator and the creation are two separate things. Okay? Nature is something that is actually separate from us, and we shouldn't see ourselves as an integral or holistic part of it. Okay, part of that holistic system. And God controls every single event within the creation, as we were talking about before with determinism. So no change can be created unless God wills it to be so. So in this instance, we're at the mercy of God's will. What do both of these entrenched paradigms share in common in that they both completely dismiss and leave at the door? Free will. They both look at us as puppets on strings. Darwinism says, since matter is supreme and controls everything in the universe, well, we're controlled by matter. We're controlled by our genes. And if you were dealt a bad hand with genes, oh, tough. Tough luck. It's the way things are. And creationism says, well, God did everything. Man's will, you know, doesn't trump God's will in any instance. And, you know, we just are at the mercy of God's will, period. We don't really have free will. Both of these paradigms look at human beings as puppets on strings with no free will of our own. What they share in common is a complete dismissal of human free will. And once again, like I say, I piss everybody off. I'm not going to leave anybody out. Don't worry about it. Because most people fall into one of these camps or another. And that's the imbalance. One is a left brain form of imbalance, one is a right brain form of imbalance. And that's why the world is in the condition that we're in. People have bought into either one of these erroneous notions, and therefore they end up dismissing human free will to change things. Because what is going to change things doesn't lie in the epigenetic domain, and it's not just God's will that's going to change things. We have to align ourselves with the will of creation, yes. What's going to do that is epigenetic evolution of humanity, which is evolution in consciousness, evolution in mind, not physical evolution of matter that just wants to propagate itself like some kind of a virus for no purpose other than to continue to exist. Consciousness is ever seeking to learn and to grow and improve upon itself and to become more complexified and more moral, to understand wider patterns that are inherent in the universe, like the difference between right and wrong. The other dangerous belief, okay, that is so propagated out there, especially by the New Age communities, is this notion that evil is necessary. Okay, because, oh, well, good exists, so evil has to exist. Nonsense. Okay? This is a false notion of inherent dualism. Yeah, well, there is inherent dualism. Love and fear. Okay? Freedom and slavery, okay? Knowledge and ignorance. They're real dualisms that exist. They're not illusions, okay? But to say for good to exist, evil has to exist, you know, that's ridiculous, you know? That's going to such an extremity. Well, for good things to exist, there has to be things that are in such a complete state of disarray and imbalance, living totally out of harmony with nature? I don't think that's true. As a matter of fact, I know it's not true. Evil is not necessary because evil is born out of free will choice. Evil doesn't exist because some program is running to make people behave a certain way. People are behaving a certain way because they're basing their behaviors on decisions that they've made based on information that they've taken in that is bad. You take in bad information, the processing is bad, so is the output. And the output is behavior. Evil is a choice based upon the information that we are working with that is corrupted. You program corrupt code into a computer, the computer is going to output bad output onto the screen or the internet, period. Same thing for a human being. So this dangerous and deceptive notion that evil is necessary, that's being propagated by a lot of the New Age communities, is nothing more than a cowardly justification for them sitting back, you know, doing nothing in the face of all the evil that's going on in our world and just allowing it to run amok. Because there's no New Ager that would ever get up on a stage and give a speech like this. They would never come out and tell you about the kind of evils that are going on in the world, out in the open, unapologetically, whether you like it or not. Because they want to sweet talk you. See, that's what a New Ager wants to do. That's how you know we are completely and diametrically opposed to each other, me and the New Age community. And people, I laugh at people who say I'm propagating New Age thought because I talk about the interconnectedness of everybody, you know, and that we're all in the same situation together. People equate that with, oh, this New Age notion of oneness and non-duality. Again, I started with the very concept, head in the stars, feet on the ground, spirit in the flesh, balance. There's nothing balanced in evil being necessary. That's not a balanced thought, okay? It's a bunch of bullshit is what it really is. Okay? Because it dismisses free will once again. We're not puppets on strings. We have a choice in the behaviors that we take. But those behaviors are going to be influenced by the information that we have taken in. A New Ager would get up here and tell you what you want to hear. I'm going to get up here and tell you what you don't want to hear, regardless of what you think about it. Because if it's true, it can do no harm in your life. You get up and start propagating things that just sound good and warm and fuzzy to people, make them feel all great, but ultimately you're giving them bad information or information that could easily lead to a form of extreme thought that is imbalanced and untrue, okay? You're going to be doing harm as a result. I'd rather get up here, tell you the truth that'll make you cry, than rather dress up a bunch of pretty New Age bullshit nonsense and make you feel really good, and then, you know, ultimately it does a lot of damage 5-10 years down the line in your life because you're operating according to things that weren't really truly based in principles and truth. So we can't just let evil run amok. We have a responsibility to change this world. I heard a New Ager, and I'm going to say his name. His name was John Lear, okay? He's into the whole paranormal and alien communities. And he told people, we're not here to change the world. We're here to allow the world to change us and be changed by the world. But we're not here to actually put actual, real, physical, lasting change into the world. And I heard that statement and on an internet radio show, and I was so blown away, it almost knocked me over. I couldn't believe that somebody actually bought into this notion that we're not here to make real change happen in the world for the better, to a point where he actually said, we're only here to be changed by the world. This is New Age bullshit at its finest, ladies and gentlemen. And people who are believing in that nonsense are completely asleep and don't know at all what it means to be awoken. Because to be awoken means you're doing the work here to change this world right here in the now where you're at now, from where you're at now. And having to do with that, we can move to the ultimate abdication of personal responsibility, waiting for a savior to come and rescue us from ourselves. And the savior doesn't have to be a religious figure, you know. Hey, I praise Jesus as the ultimate anarchist and the ultimate change agent in slides ago. Now I'm going to tell you, you're waiting on that as an external force. You'll be waiting forever, and you'll be allowing evil to just take this place. Okay? It's not about waiting for anything outside of ourselves. The Christ consciousness and energy lives within all of us if we awaken it and then act upon it. Christ was an activist. Just read the stories and the allegorical stories in the biblical texts. He was out there taking action. He was speaking to the lowest consciousness people of the community, trying to uplift their consciousness with his higher consciousness. That's doing the work, you know? Now, we don't want to talk to our family members, you know, let alone the next door neighbor or the people who are, you know, following orders in the military and the police. This idea, and you know, it doesn't have to be a religious figure. It could be Buddha, it could be Shiva or any of the other traditional saviors, or you could have a Quetzalcoatl up there, okay? Or it could be the Zetans or the Andromedans, you know, the Galactic Federation of Light. All of these so-called saviors, they're just tripping over themselves to get here to rescue us from our own ignorance. Yeah. Yeah. Well, listen, you know, let me know how that's working out for you a decade down the line, and then 2 decades and 3 decades, because you'll still be waiting. Okay? The work is ours to do for ourselves, or we haven't learned the lesson. We haven't learned anything. It's about taking action in this domain, because what happens here matters.
I hope you enjoyed tonight's seminar series. We will continue this series for weeks to come, so please come back on next Sunday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern time for the continuation of this series, What It Truly Means to Be Awake. Visit my main website at www.awaken-us.org. For more information on upcoming shows, events, podcasts, book signings, and much more, and reviews and comments can be emailed to us at awakenus@yahoo.com. I will now accept any callers to the show. Dial 516-531-9476. That's 516-531-9476. Press number 1 to speak with me. It all means nothing if you don't stand up for something. You can't just stop the time. You got to walk that walk. Yes, you do. It all means nothing if you don't stand up.
I understand, ain't here to judge, just to take a stand. The greater plan, the creator's plan. Let's all rise like the day began. Reach out and touch with the Savior's hand. On rock we stand like his native land. Let the ways of love be the ways of man.